You know, buying seeds can get expensive, so you want to make sure you know how to get good quality seeds. Or maybe you'd like to save your own. Well, we'll help you out with both of those options today. I'm Jill Najeau, and this is Garden Talk. Our next guest is Clint Freund. He is co-owner of Cultivating the Commons, a seed growing company based in Amory, Wisconsin. And we'll talk with him about seed saving, heirloom seeds, and more. And we'll take your questions and comments. And just for those who were listening earlier, that was pre-recorded. Right now, we are live. So we can take your calls. And the number is 800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Clint, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I bet you're kind of enjoying the colder weather because you have kind of a break. Maybe?
Sort of. We segue quickly into seed testing, seed cleaning, all those sort of things from the season. So there is a little bit of a lull sometime in July where all the seeds are doing the thing. And then we start cranking again into the fall. And then it just gradually transitions into more indoor work, sitting at tables, counting to 100 over and over and over again. As I test all the seeds to make sure they're doing good.
Yeah, that's going to kind of drive you crazy a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, or do you have to be a special kind of person to be able to do that?
Oh, I studied music and I just put on lots of different music and go on adventures through all that while I'm counting.
Yes, and to time, right? So you're going to be doing a cut time for the seeds.
You got it. Yeah.
I love it. Well, tell us how you got into the seed growing business.
Sure. I started off on a dairy farm, actually just across from the Horicon Marsh. I think an earlier chat was about the Horicon Marsh that I heard. Grew up on a dairy farm, loved it. Ended up going into music. All of us kind of went to different humanities. But after I finished that degree, just kind of met a crossroads, didn't want to sit in front of computers, et cetera, et cetera. A friend saved me and introduced me to some of my favorite mentors, Beth Pincus and Steve Kasmar. They run TB Produce outside of Madison, Wisconsin. Spent almost 8 years cutting my teeth, didn't know what kale was, loved it, and just kept going farther and farther down the wormhole. And also I got to the end of, I found out I wanted to know where seed came from. I saw these packets on the table and just kind of questioned who these corporations were or these people making the seed. And suddenly I wanted to find someone that grew seed and maybe I'll try some of my own. And I had little gardens. Tried it out, was completely in awe of the onion flower. And then I did find some mentors I was able to apprentice with, Beth and Nathan Corum. They live out in western Nebraska, so out in the dry land. Spent 2 years studying every type of kind of garden vegetable you could grow for seed. But definitely knew I had to get back to Wisconsin. I love this land base. I love being in the upper Midwest here. So trying to bring those skills back with me. And kind of started this business as a way to take that to the next level.
And it's hard work, right? I would assume it's not something that it's 9 to 5, 5 days a week.
Yes, it's all encompassing for sure. Yeah, the plants, it's a different level. Once you learn how to grow the vegetable, growing the seed is another next level to just figure out and wrap your head around when's the right time to harvest, make sure you're shooting the windows correctly, make sure you're drying it down properly, maybe avoiding disease issues, all those different selection-oriented things. It takes a lot of people and friends. Cassandra McKinnon was key in moving back with me and helping start this business and continues to provide support as we develop the next spot.
Yeah, that was one of my next questions is how many people do you need to make this business successful?
For the most part, it's just us, on a small farmstead. Right now we collaboratively farm with some neighbors, Whetstone Farm and Amory. We both do vegetable oriented things and great. They also have a grazing business. And then, we have lots of cohorts in the seed business realm. A lot of people have helped me along the way, including the Experimental Farm Network, Nature Nurture Seeds. You'll find there's an explosion of small bioregional seed companies out there since the early, teens or aughts in 2000s. I think there's a lot of interest in exploring bioregional seed and small seed companies being able to offer their product through online websites and things like that.
What are the advantages of having bioregional seed?
One of the key advantages is growing often most of these seed companies, a lot of big seed companies are often growing seed grown from all across the world. And it's often a shell game as to where that seed came from. They obviously had superior breeding techniques from across the world in different ways. Bioregionalism focuses on growing seed in situ, saving seed from the environment it was grown in, and that, you know, excelled or did great in those spots. So when I look at my row of broccoli plants, I pick out, you know, the ones that are doing the best or showing the best traits that I want, you know, either productivity or disease resistance. And then you select from there and continue that into the future with every selection. So usually companies that focus on that trait to kind of sell, you know, focus on that. Let's see here. That's about it. We also focus on our certified organic practices. So a lot of our stuff's put through that gauntlet of more like organic matter oriented field situations. You know, we don't use a ton of pesticides, maybe one little BT oriented thing, but otherwise we try to make the plant look, you know, select for resilience. And
So as a gardener, we would definitely want to seek out seeds that we're growing in the area where we want to plant them, right?
Totally. Absolutely. One of the big projects I'm working on right now through a grant is growing out a very diverse broccoli strain. The goal is of the grant is to grow as many varieties together to make this explosion of diversity from which growers and home gardeners can select their favorite plants out of that do best in their soil types, their short season or long season or hot season or this or that. And so that'll be a 3-year project over the next few years where we combine, recombine, you know, crisscross and cross all these different varieties to make this really interesting family of plants that home gardeners can do that selection.
So you've become quite the scientist then through all this work.
Yeah, it is kind of a citizen scientist. I feel like a jack of all trades in that realm where I learn and have a distinct interest, but not a distinct, doctorate or anything in it. But I have a lot of excitement and enthusiasm for it.
And hands-on helps a great deal too, I would assume.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, your business is called Cultivating the Commons. Now, where did that name come from?
Initially my thought was that I noticed a lot of seeds were hybrids or they had utility patents or things that kind of guarded the genetics. And you'll find that, you know, either F1s aren't inherently bad, but they do hide their genetics and you can't save their seed easily. A lot of utility patents tend to block people from saving the seed or from researchers or breeders or what have you from using those traits in their programs or in their gardens. And the goal of the commons was something we all have in common, we share. So the genetic diversity that is something we've inherited as a civilization or a group of humans on this planet from everyone before us is kind of what we all have in common. And I was excited to maybe run a business around that ethos of cultivating that together, cultivating these genetics that have been passed down to us.
Okay. And how does community itself play into your company?
In several ways. We offer classes, we do workshops, we do tours on the farm. My ultimate goal was to eventually land somewhere with enough farmers nearby or people that would be at the forefront of the plants, you know, providing food for people, also selecting cultivars they really enjoy. It's easy to see a dependency in farming. There's so many parameters to control, and often seed is a really difficult one to dance with. And you kind of just go with trusted catalogs or this or that. And stick with that. And I totally respect that. But they also have a key knowledge about how to pick out those select cultivars or we, you know, develop new varieties of this or that. So I was excited to maybe get in a region that had more small farmers that had the capacity or interest in developing and selecting together and offering seed through an entity or a group. We're getting there. It takes time though to develop relationships and things like that. And also to train people. So bit by bit.
Sure. We did get a call from Damien in Rib Lake. He couldn't stay with us, but he grows plants in a greenhouse and wants to be able to transition the greenhouse seeds into a field. What does he need to know about doing that?
I believe he's talking about transplanting greenhouse transplants into the garden.
I think so. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah. Not particular about seed saving, but a very simple technique is when you're growing indoor plants in your greenhouses, you have to expose them gradually. So as soon as they're big enough You know, they're in trays, they're big enough and green and lush, and they're ready to head outside. And you don't want to put them in the ground right away. You wait, you give them a couple, at least a week to expose them to UV rays and wind and temperature switches and stuff like that. So it hardens their cell walls and makes them nice and sturdy and ready to go into the ground. So I always wait at least 1 week.
At least a week, yeah. Yeah. And do you put them in a shady area first and then transition out to the sun, or sun first?
Oh, no, I usually expose them. Yeah, okay. Right away. Mm-hmm. Keep them watered, maybe drought them a little bit. But yeah, usually I'll seed stuff into trays, overseed it usually. And then in my selection process as a seed grower, I'm culling in the flat these little seedlings that don't seem as strong as the others. So I have my strongest selected, you know, individuals going out into the field. And then they get more selections after I transplant, you know. Whoever's the strongest made it to the field will then get selected there for either productivity or just vigor in face of the potato beetle or something, you know.
Sure. Lots of observation, I would assume.
Lots of it, yeah.
Do you take lots of copious notes, or is this stuff you keep in your head?
It's a lot in the head. I do try to – now with phones, it's so easy to take pictures and keep up with some things. And so I do try to take – I'm a visual person, so – that's usually very helpful. But otherwise, a lot of intuition. And, you know, 8 years at a large-scale farm and then another 8 years doing small-scale, you develop a lot of eye for things.
Certainly. So what do you do with all the seeds that you do grow? Where do they go?
Okay. Yeah. Well, we started off in my apprenticeship growing for their small seed company, and then they did lots of growing for regional or national companies. So at the moment, I got introduced to growing wholesale. So I'll grow a huge area of, say, I don't know, a little popcorn. And that maybe I'll harvest 400 pounds or whatever of that. And that gets shipped to another company, and then they repackage it and disperse that to customers. So a lot of our seed is collected. A bulk of our income comes from growing for companies like Seed Savers Exchange. Let's see here. Southern Exposure Seed Exchange, Baker's Creek Heirlooms, if you've heard of them.
Yeah, we talk to Jer almost every year. So,
Yeah, we've been growing tomatoes and peppers for them. So we might grow upwards of 10 pounds of tomato seed. That could be a big swath of an area. And we'll just harvest tomatoes just for the seed. Harvest that. Everything gets cleaned, dried down, packaged and sent out. And then I usually have a lot of little secondary other stuff for our small seed company. So I do a lot of seed sales through our small online account. And we meet area greenhouses. Sometimes we put seed racks in as another way to obtain seed we grow. But yeah, other companies. And then we smell through a lot of small ones like the Experimental Farm Network or So True Seeds out of Virginia, North Circle Seeds out of Minnesota here. There's a probably upwards of 10 different companies we work with and distribute our seed through.
So there's a lot of networking, I'm assuming, that goes on with this, with you, the smaller seed companies. Is there information out there? Where would you recommend someone go who's maybe interested in growing some seed for sale?
Well, most of my associations are through the Organic Seed Alliance. They're a large nonprofit on the West Coast. They actually have a conference coming up this spring in February or in winter. But you can visit their website, and they have a whole sale. They have a whole listing of all organic, small, you know, big and small seed companies throughout the U.S. And you can probably search for smaller companies through their listing. Otherwise, a lot of small seed companies tend to be very convivial about sharing other companies out there. And you can visit some of the ones I listed. And they'll have links to other people in the region.
Sure. So what are some of the varieties that you grow for sale?
Oh, gosh, man. I was just going through it last night, the other night, because I'm like, yeah, I got to finish my testing here so we can offer, have everything ready to be offered. You know, I think we offer over 130 different varieties.
Wow.
And it mostly comes from just purely our experiences. So it isn't like we haven't done hundreds of trials. It's mostly from what's worked from us. Working at farms, what I've seen farmers enjoy, or what I'm amazed by or excited to offer people that maybe they can't have, it isn't being offered currently. So our offering is very mixed and diversified, but usually works really well in the upper Midwest. It's most functional in this climate. But I ship stuff all the way down to Alabama, to San Diego, the coasts. There are people. It's amazing what the algorithm will help point people towards.
Excellent.
Even small little hole in the wall companies like this. Yeah.
I love it. We're talking about growing and saving seeds with Clint Freund. He's the co-owner of Cultivating the Commons, and we'll be back to talk more about it right after this little bit of news. Welcome back to Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about growing and saving seeds with Clint Freund. He's co-owner of Cultivating the Commons, a seed-growing company based in Amory, Wisconsin. What questions do you have about saving seeds? Do you need some advice on how to select good seeds? Well, join in by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Clint, I noticed on your website that you're part of the Open Source Seed Initiative. Why don't you talk a little bit about what that is and why it's important to you?
Sure. The Open Source Seed Initiative was started a little bit back. I kind of alluded to some of the dilemmas people were facing with either hybrid or utility patents issues in breeding, saving seed, this and that. OSSI was developed in Wisconsin and amongst some other states and developers. They were developing a concept around kind of open source technology wherein the code and stuff is open and for use. It's kind of patented left, copy left or whatever, in essence, and free to use and be developed upon. And so the OSSI was developed as a place where people, gardeners, breeders could submit varieties that they've developed and want to keep in for public use. And usually all those varieties have a little subheader. I could bring it up, but you know, usually it restricts privatizing the genetics or traits therein for that variety and promotes continue to be used thereafter. If you're seed saving it or offering it to other places, that you offer the same rights of the seed to be shared, to be used for breeding and other such things. I have a few varieties I offer. A lot of companies they've tried to develop their own varieties and offer it through it. I think some of them are great and they're really vigorous and well-bred by these people, and we'd like to continue that program and see where it goes.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Now, let's go to the actual growing the seeds itself.
Yeah,
how,
sure.
Is it different than growing for, say, produce? Because most people grow a tomato to sell the tomato, not the seeds. So.
Correct. So I think there's a lot of steps. No, there's not a lot. Okay, let me retract. There's not a lot of steps. I usually have my first three things I tell people: keep it simple, keep it interesting, and then just do that little modicum of research. You'll find growing the vegetable is definitely one thing. And then often there's a few more steps for the seed. Sometimes it'll surprise you, sometimes it won't. But usually there's four steps for me, what I teach people. One is you have to find the open pollinated seed. So you have to first define that, and that just generally means seed that's able to be saved, and their offspring will look like the parents. So when we're looking for open pollinated, generally anything that's heirloom or in that vein of thought, you know, either it's labeled open pollinated or it's just simply not labeled hybrid. Hybrid is a breeding process wherein they use inbred parents, and when you save the seed from those offspring of them, you tend up getting mixed up traits that aren't quite what you're looking for or hoping for. And it could take years of segregating and sorting to get the variety you want, which is an adventure that some people do. For the home gardener, sticking with open pollinated heirloom is great. The next thing you'd have to know is if it's annual or biennial. Does it make seed the first year or does it make seed a second year? Is this going to be a longer adventure or a short one? And for new gardeners or new seed savers, I recommend annuals. Often you'll do a little research and you'll find out, oh, it grows seed in 1 year, like the tomato. Very easy. There it is. You have ripe fruit ready to harvest the seed from and make a sandwich. Other plants like eggplant, you're going to let the plant go as far as possible to ripeness. You will not want to eat it by the time the seed is ripe, and you got to let it sit on the plant all season long. So I usually recommend people visiting seedsavers.org/learn, and they have a resource for every species you can imagine in the garden. And you can find out the little steps you'll need to take to see that seed saving through. But yeah, I can take questions today too if you have specific crops you'd like to talk
about.
Sure,
wonderful. Well, we do have a caller. Not quite about that, but something else. Ron in La Crosse, go right ahead.
Yes, my question is, I have a vacuum sealer. It's a type of thing where you can preserve food,
nice,
boldly vegetables, in a special bag, or you can suction air out of a mason jar, you know, with a lid to prolong the viability of foods and things. If a person were to vacuum seal, say, any type of seed in a special bag for this vacuum sealer, is you think that taking the air out would help prolong the viability of seeds?
Oh, for sure. So definitely when saving seed, I recommend getting your seed as dry as possible. You harvest from the field. You spent all season growing it. You bring it in. You let it dry completely. And then you thresh and clean it. And that usually just means getting some of the chaff off before you put it away for storage. After things are nice and dry, like seed should crunch or snap. There should be no flexibility in the seed. That's when you know it's getting very close to dry. In my undertaking and practice, my mentors are always like, paper is forgiving. And they always said that because in the past they put things in the plastic or this or that, and it might have been too early. And I've already seen this professionally. People put things in the plastic and then they mold because they're a little too moist yet. And so I often like to let things sit, you know, in a dry area through the winter. And then maybe in spring I'll package them into plastic. Plastic being the next step up. What you're trying to do is separate the seed from humidity, which can help deteriorate its longevity. Temperature fluctuations are a big thing as well. So you want to keep a even, cool, dry area. For storing, yeah, paper's okay. It helps dehesc the seed, or, you know, it helps dry the seed out. But then, you know, plastic's great, or thicker mill plastic's great. Jars or glass is ultimately the best. And as separating oxygen from the process, I haven't tried it, but I could see that working out pretty well. People do, to extend the life of their seed, package it and put it away into freezers. So once it's ultimately very dry and won't get any frost damage when you freeze it, you can put it in the freezer. And I recommend people just putting them into little packages in a bigger package so you can just pull out one at a time as you need them every season. I personally go through seed quite a bit, so I don't have a lot of experience around freezing, but we do utilize it to kill bugs sometimes if there is bugs in the seed lot. But I think vacuum sealing probably is not a bad option.
Do some experimentation, Ron. Make sure you wait.
Yeah, always. Before you package anything, my strongest thing is make sure your seed is good and crisp, good and dry.
Good and dry. Because it can be very deceiving, can it,
to
looking at a seed. So do you have buildings, I'm assuming, that you use for this?
Yes. So a lot of the crops that we're used to are very Eurocentric. They're often Mediterranean-esque. You know, broccolis or this or that, and they're used to dry climates of the coastals. So growing up for seed in the Midwest requires a lot of hoops to jump. Certain crops do well outside. Some I do grow undercover. Maybe the first year I grow outside, and then the second year when I make seed, I'll grow them in hoop house culture. I'll harvest the dry pods, let them finish on tarps undercover or in sheds, and then we thresh, separate the seed from the chaff. And then after that, they get put into basically paper bags until there's finer cleaning. Trying to remember what the beginning of your question was there.
Oh, that was so long ago.
Stories. We have lots of buildings. We often let things cure under sheds or awnings and stuff, mm-hmm, or under tarps so they can finish in the sun. Crops move pretty quickly once they start drying down.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to utilize like a drying dryers, I guess, is what I'm thinking.
No, we don't use too many dryers. Usually the climate's been good enough to allow that. And usually our hoop house culture for some of these dry seeded crops is good to do in.
Okay.
I recommend people at home to just hang them in their garage,
mm-hmm.
either keep them on a tarp, make sure there's not too many pests around. I know lots of people will bring something in and then have mice scurry quickly to them. So don't forget to put a trap out. And that's the recommendation there. But yeah, usually I let things just sit out of the rain as much as you can or off the humidity of the grass.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, we've been talking about, I'm tossing around some of these terms, heirloom. Mm-hmm. There's also new loom. And of course, then there's hybrid seed. Can we talk a little bit about the difference between those?
Sure. New loom, I just throw out there for fun because it's, gosh, I think with these small seed companies, there's just a little explosion going on of possibility for new varieties or new species, or just new fun new plants to play with, right? So mm-hmm. a lot of companies are always breeding new stuff to put out there, but all these small companies have their opportunity now and a platform through their business or associative businesses to like offer these different varieties. And so I often call them new looms, soon to be heirlooms. I think heirloom, I think, is defined as, I think there's a definition of it, but it's an open pollinated plant that generally has a cultural history extending back maybe 80 to 100 years thereabout. So it's been something passed down from generation to generation, maybe through a particular culture or people. It's been maintained that way. Now, a lot, plants have a very similar tendency to narrow their genetics, and heirlooms tend to be very narrow. And although I do encourage exploring heirlooms and things, I also encourage exploring a lot of new looms or genetically diverse things, the things that have more genetic traits that maybe had been lost through the heirloom process.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think people are opening them, heirlooms aren't the only thing to grab. There's a lot of different new varieties out there to play with and see, and people are experimenting with breeding and seed saving. So I think it's a wonderfully diverse world out there to explore now.
Great. We're talking about growing and saving seeds with Clint Freund. He's co-owner of Cultivating the Commons, a seed growing company based in Amory. Join in by calling 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And this is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. Stay with us because coming up in the last half hour of the show, we'll help you grow lavender with tips from lavender farmers Kathy and Randy Meyer of Potter Creek Lavender in Pulaski. Right now, we are talking about saving seed, using seed, and all that good stuff. So I was looking at your website, like I said, Clint, and I see that you actually have learning opportunities. So how do folks get involved with interns?
Certainly. People can apply, reach to us online if they live in the area or want to put in a day a week. We welcome folks to the farm. We have also other opportunities, like we do tours, annual tours in July, where you call our bloom tour, where you can view and take in all the different seeds you've bought or like in their flowering states, everything from carrots to tomatoes to onions, you name it, all sorts of stuff looks great. We also offer workshops across the area up in the region here, including a couple this year. We'll have listed on our Facebook as well as website. Most of them are in Minnesota, but one is the Women's Environmental Institute on March 22nd. We'll be offering a class at that. We also go to seed swaps in the area, including the Kelly Farm Seed Swap on March 8th. And there is also a Traditional and Green Skills event in Prairie Farm, Wisconsin on the 8th as well, that we try to support or attend if we can.
Are those events listed on your website?
They will be soon. Most of our stuff is plugged away on Instagram or Facebook, but you can find us in those spots most active.
Yeah. And just to make sure you all know, it's Cultivating the Commons. Your website is ctcseeds, right? .com?
Yep.
So ctcseeds.com, so you can find it.
Anyone listening that logs in and is able to make a purchase, we have a little, you type in Garden Talk, all caps, and you can get a little percent off your sale.
Oh, nice. Purchase. We like deals.
Stop on by. Thanks so much for listening.
Oh, sure. So tell us about this broccoli thing you're talking about earlier, little bit more detail. This sounds really interesting.
Absolutely. I've been following a person named Joseph Lofthouse out of Utah. He's a kind of a renegade farmer or something, what do you call? He kind of went back to his family's land, started farming again, growing mostly garden vegetables for market gardens or markets in the area, but finding a lot of seed insufficient to his needs. He has a high elevation, short climate or short season climate, cold. So he started, he has a background in plants, but he started breeding what was called land races, basically highly diverse populations of different like species. So one I noted was melons. You know, a melon just couldn't even make a ripe fruit up there. So he grew out 10 different varieties. You know, 90% of it died. Three made some sort of fruit he could save seed of. The next year, he took that seed, all mixed up, threw it back in the field, had a better like 50%. And next year, it was even better. 90% had made fruit. That was successful. It was tasty. And it was even showing genetics from things that didn't survive that first round, but had passed on to other plants, their genetics. Mm-hmm. He saw a trait for this large, heavily ribbed type. And so he knew that there was a lot of crossing going on, and that was something to explore there and developing these highly diverse genetic populations for doing selections and finding something that does well in your climate, your situation. Out of that came this nonprofit called Going to Seed. They're based, I believe, in California. They've been offering grants to farmers to do on-farm breeding and programs around that same philosophy of creating these highly diverse populations. And just farming in the area, there's a lot of different things you can complain about as a farmer in terms of disease or this or that. But broccoli is just always this resounding one. Everyone just laments losing 50% of their broccoli to alternaria or some crown rot or this or that as large-scale growers. And even gardeners, you know, can suffer the same stuff. But I thought sprouting broccoli was always going to be a solution maybe to these, like, if we're so used to crown heads, big heads that just don't function in this climate well, maybe we need to focus on something else. And maybe we need something more interesting, diverse to select from. And so I just proposed a plan and they accepted it. And so we'll probably spend the next 2 to 3 years crossing, recrossing, and crisscrossing a lot of different varieties. We pull a lot of varieties from the USDA seed bank. USDA has a large seed bank anyone can access and acquire a little packet of different things that have been discovered and brought back to our seed bank. So we had a lot of things from Italy or China or these different things we put into the garden, you know, 10 of each. They're all allowed to flower together if they did flower. And then we collected the seed at the end of the season. And then they'll go on to next year and make another round. And we'll probably introduce, hopefully, another 10 to 15 different varieties we can drum up from either home gardeners or companies across the U.S. or across this, you know, the world, really. I would be interested in any. If you have a broccoli, contact me.
There you go.
We'd love to grow it.
So it's kind of like a survival of the fittest kind of a thing?
In essence. And I think survival of the fittest. And, you know, one of the goals is having that crossing, whether it was fit or not. Maybe it didn't have a great particular trait for this thing, but it did have really nice, you know, branching or this or that, and it mm-hmm. might pass on useful traits to the population. And then we leave the traits we don't want behind. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully the crisscrossing is the crucial part, not just 1 year, but usually up to 3 years of crisscrossing that'll create these stacked and dense populations of mm-hmm. different things.
So when are you hoping to have a final outcome?
right? And yeah, seed saving can be a very long affair. I mean, it's good that you have patience and
yes
and you're very excited about it. I'm pretty excited about broccoli, so I know our goal was 3 years, and I think we have funding for two now, and we'll see how three comes along. But you can take a sneak peek. We are offering last year's seed from the process, and so you can play with it in your garden and see how it works or what mm-hmm. it looks like. I'd be curious to know. I haven't even grown it yet, so this will be fun to see this next year.
For sure. So what do you grow the most of on your farm?
Oh gosh. You know, tomatoes do really well in our climate. Mm-hmm. So we grow a ton of tomatoes. We'll be growing, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand pepper plants of this one variety for another seed company. So that's exciting. We do grow a lot of garlic. We sell through a couple different companies, like as seed quality. So that takes up a lot of room. Mm-hmm. But we grow, all sorts of things. I mean, usually there's probably 80 different things in the garden that we'll probably be trying to save the seed of, or at least observing and watching.
Sure, sure. So what about coming up in 2025? Do you have some new varieties that you're excited about selling?
There is one I think we'll be offering through Seed Savers Exchange called Cochran's Old Time. They haven't offered it from there, and they kind of brought it up from their seed banks, and they're excited to offer it. So we'll be growing out the seed of that variety of onion. I think it's from Cochran, Wisconsin. Oh. It's kind of a Florence type, I would describe it as. More mm-hmm. of like an elongated red type that kind of has a variation of color. Really beautiful onion. Let's see here. What else are we excited about? There's a new cabbage I'm excited to say make seed called Red Flame. It's kind of a more crunchy, fresh eating red type. That's got like more like pink. It's a new thing. Usually there's red or green, but now a lot of new varieties that are coming out have a nice dashing of color, either purple veins. So this one's got a nice pink with darker colors going on and mm-hmm. light colors. So that'll be really fun to watch make seed and offer that.
Yeah, for sure. So any like last words for people who want to start saving some seeds, maybe some do's and don'ts?
Sure. Yep. Keep it simple. Keep it interesting. My mentors are like, if you're saving seed and you're going to that work, you better love eating it. So, you know, pick your most thing you're excited about. Uh-huh. And usually for beginning, I usually tell them to pick annuals that are, you know, don't require crossing or anything. So tomatoes, peas, and beans are a great place to start. Mm-hmm. And then visit your local seed swaps. You know, look them up. Look up seed swaps in Wisconsin. I'm sure you'll find some in the region nearby. I know the Oshkosh Valley, Fox Valley has a few that they do. And there's some in southern Wisconsin and some in northern Wisconsin. So, yeah.
Okay, great. And your website again?
That's www.ctcseeds.com. Okay. CTC.com.
And you're on Facebook and Instagram?
Yeah.
Okay. And you can see some really nice pictures on the website and on that social media. So you can see a little bit about what's going on. And if people can just, if they want to take a tour, they can contact you on one of those.
Oh, yeah. It's a very open farm policy. Please send a message. And mm-hmm. if you're swinging through the area, we're more than happy to take time to show people around.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Clint. We really appreciate you taking the time and get back to counting those seeds. Our guest has been Clint Freund. He's co-owner of Cultivating the Commons, a seed company based in Amory, Wisconsin. Coming up next, we'll be talking about growing lavender. Join in with your questions or comments by calling 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org.